WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The star of last year's erotic thriller, The Last Seduction, is the star of this summer's hit family film, Casper. Go figure. Well, it's a tribute to Bill Pullman's versatility, and if you want another example of it, he also plays the romantic lead in the hit comedy While You Were Sleeping. He's the brother who isn't in a coma. We invited Bill Pullman to talk with us about his movies and his life. Let's start with his role in Casper as the father of a girl whose best friend is a friendly ghost.
I played Dr. James Harvey, ghost therapist. And for those who have never encountered a ghost therapist before, it's someone who's decided that there's a realm of problems that people are haunted by that can best be addressed by actually going to the thing that's haunting them, the ghost. So, and I've done this probably for 2 years before the story starts because of a connection with my own wife's death, where I lost her 2 years before the story starts, and I secretly kind of have a thought that maybe there's going to be some way to communicate to her. So now I get hired to go to Whipstaff Mansion to do therapy on the ghosts that are haunting that house to get them to resolve their problems so that they can move on.
Sounds familiar, very, doesn't it?
Somehow saying it on NPR, it sounds very legitimate to me. I love it.
So you're in a movie where one of your co-stars, or several of your co-stars really, are animated and therefore non-existent when you're shooting the scene. How disorienting was that to do scenes where the characters are going to be filled in afterwards?
Well, you know, there's a certain amount of that kind of work that gets done by every actor almost on every movie where you're doing camera, you know, is usually with like singles where you're looking at somebody else and you can't get them close enough to the mat box, so you have to look at a piece of tape that's on the mat box and talk to that. So in that way, you know, I was somewhat familiar, every actor is, I think, but once it got into the domain of things like sword fighting with them and three at the same time where they can move in any direction, 360 degrees all around you, and it becomes more like ballet, you know, where you're counting out the whole piece and you're finding where your looks are and you're doing simulation like isometrics and trying to push resistance and then release. And, you know, so it was kind of like a technical exercise, like a ballet class or something sometimes.
The past couple of years for you have been real life-changing in terms of your career between The Last Seduction, While You Were Sleeping, and now Casper. When you shot Casper, where were you in your career? What movies had come out, and what was your image in Hollywood at the time?
Well, you know, I had kind of, it worked in at that point. I hadn't done While You Were Sleeping, hadn't shot that because we shot that last fall. And The Last Seduction, I think what had already run its first run on cable, which was at that point, it seemed like that's all it was going to do. So I didn't say yes to Casper right away. I thought, man, I don't know if I want to get into this whole realm, and seems a little, you know, inconsequential or something. But the more I got talking to everybody involved in it, it seemed like a kind of a fun lark, like a different way to look at filmmaking and different way of kind of going to work every day. And there was a lot of physical work that I had to do in it. So I thought, oh, this is kind of like my little Charlie Chaplin thing, you know, very physical, and that would be worthwhile doing.
Well, let me get to your role in The Last Seduction. You play a cynical guy, but not quite cynical enough. For instance, you're not onto how your wife has set you up. And I want to play a short clip. This is a scene toward the end of the film when a stranger has broken into your house and is tying you up. And we, the audience, know what this is about, but your character does not.
Now what?
I'm going to gag you.
How am I going to tell you where everything is? Am I yelling? You have a gun. I'm cooperating. Forget the gag.
Gag's important.
Did you read a book on this? You know, kid, you don't look like a dopehead.
What?
I just write prescriptions, right? I got no stash. The money goes to a loan shark. I got some aspirin in the medicine cabinet, but other than that, I got nothing here you want.
I'm not interested in your drugs, all right?
You're just breaking in at random? Great. The guy next door is out of town for a month.
Open!
Did The Last Seduction put you through a lot of mood changes, mood swings, in the sense that, oh boy, a great script, how exciting. Oh, it's just going to play on HBO and never get released theatrically, what a bummer. Oh, it's getting released theatrically and it's a big cult film now. You know, I mean, it just kept going back and forth between success and failure.
Yeah. And then it here accounts that, like, Linda Fiorentino was in France at screenings and they stood up at the end going, Linda, Linda, you know. I think, man, this was the same movie that we made for, like, I don't know, a couple mil in some warehouse down in Culver City. And, yeah, it was a surprise.
Did anybody stand up and chant, Bill, Bill?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think when you die in a movie, they don't end up kind of like calling for you to come back. But
one of the men are kind of chumps in the film.
Yeah. They, you know, in some realm. But I always thought that, like with Clay, that character, that he was probably the most appropriate man for her to be with. And she kind of, I get this from her performance too, that like there's just this gaming quality that they're like really right for each other. And if I hadn't slapped her at the opening, we would have gone on and just spent the money and had our life there in New York. But I slapped her, and she just suddenly decided, no, I'm going to take it all.
Now, let me ask you about another film. In Sleepless in Seattle, you played Meg Ryan's fiancé, a man who has so many allergies, he seems to be allergic to everything. And in a way, that becomes a metaphor for his character, how he's almost allergic to life itself, which clues us to the fact that he's not the man for her. This must have been a thankless part in a way, you know, because he's the guy who we're not supposed to like.
Mm. Yeah. And when I was first looking at it, you can get seduced into looking at things from such different perspectives and forget what the bottom line is. But at that point, I was really intrigued by what I was hearing, which was that he was, you know, that the idea would be that he wouldn't be just kind of sloughed off as like a lesser person or a lesser candidate, that he it'd be more like what Jimmy Stewart's part was in Philadelphia Story. And it just kind of ended up not being really executed that way. But because I thought there was a lot of ground to make that case, and that Walter himself was living in denial that the relationship wasn't right between he and her. And that, so they're two-way street, you know, which I think it often happens, you know, and two people are together and they shouldn't be, but they kind of just deny it. And little things, little signs kind of occur, like he could run into a car or something in a kind of a vacant moment and then think, oh, no, it's not a sign of anything. And but it ended up being just didn't end up working out that way. So it's a very kind of tough thing. I learned a lot from doing it, though. I learned an awful lot. Sometimes you learn more from the roles that mm-hmm. don't go well for you as you do from ones that do well, you know.
What would you learn?
Well, I learned that I never want to go into agreeing to do something unless I see it on the page. And that I really want to – I also learned to kind of read a director when they say, oh, yeah, I really like that idea and we'll use that, to know whether they're really – really have that inside the molecular structure of their brain or whether they're just saying it. But I think it does. It did kind of guide me well in terms of like while you were sleeping, I
I was very kind of had to be a strong advocate for the part, which everyone kind of acknowledged was the most underwritten part, was my part, Jack, in While You're Sleeping. And the director was someone I had to read quickly whether he understood what I was saying before I agreed to do it or not. And he did and agreed, and we kept working on it all the way through, and it really worked out well.
Well, what are some of the things you suggested to the director about your character in While You Were Sleeping?
Well, I can think of, you know, this leaning scene where I'm leaning into her was a kind of a great example in that that wasn't in the original script or anything. And it didn't even kind of incarnate itself in the way I'd imagined. But it started with me, it started with the scene which written as a very hostile argument between she and I, where we were saying a lot of stuff about how we were, I said how disappointing she was to me, and she said how disappointing I was to her. And it didn't seem to have any kind of it didn't seem sexy to me, for one thing. It didn't seem like it felt too wounding. Like, you can't slice people like that and then go back with them. So I said to him, we were getting closer and closer to shooting it, and there's a lot of politics about changing a lot of lines sometimes with the studio. But I said, you know, I think the whole thing works if I just lean about 1 inch from her mouth. And we have the whole argument, like 1 inch from each other's mouth. So we could say almost anything, but we're almost, you know, it's almost like what we're saying isn't as important as the fact that we're breathing each other's smell or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he took that, and he then kind of came back with this idea, well, maybe you kind of lean, you have this leaning thing at the beginning, and then out of that, this kind of out of the proximity that you have to each other and the inappropriateness of it comes the argument. And so that, like, we're arguing about things that are really about the fact that we're frustrated. So I think that kind of, and he's a very good director, this guy, John Turteltaub, I really liked working with him a lot. And it's that kind of collaboration that really allowed the part to have a little bit more, a little more life and dimension.
My guest is actor Bill Pullman. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Bill Pullman is my guest, and he's now starring in Casper and in While You Were Sleeping, and he also starred in The Last Seduction. Let's go back to the beginning. You grew up in upstate New York. Your father was a doctor, and I think you had 6 siblings.
Right. Yeah?
So what was it like to have a father who's a doctor? Did he take care of you when you got sick?
Yeah, he did all of the... I used to have sore throats a lot, so he used to roll me over on the couch and shoot me up with penicillin.
Oh, see, I hated that as a kid. And my doctor used to scare me, you know? He came in, I thought, this guy... I always associated his kind of face with the face of a doctor and with pain, because he always gave me a shot of penicillin.
Did you get it in your rump?
Of course. That's how they gave it to all kids then. No matter what you had, right? You got a shot of penicillin.
I think it was the humiliation of that it was...
Well, it must have been worse getting it from your father than getting it from a doctor who at least left when it was over, right?
Well, you know, it's on the family sofa, and, you know, that way you could just kind of keep lying there. You wouldn't have to get up. But he was always interesting that way, how very supportive of the life that I chose, and I think he kind of had a lot of wisdom in the way he dealt with things, and he was always kind of interest in just in terms of his ego. I guess I've been thinking about this lately because I was thinking, you know, I've kind of, every once in a while somebody will say, well, you're just not your regular guy or somebody, you're not hugely demanding on the sets. You know, I really almost kind of like feel more like a producer when I'm acting than an actor, in that I really want the whole team to do well and I don't need any special attention and everything. So it's somehow egoless, and that sometimes can be also read as dismissible in some ways. Like, if you're going late, does he suffer? No, he's not suffering. Let's keep going. You know? But And I thought, you know, I realized that with my father's, and the whole idea of being in medicine is that you have very little ego and you have a lot of ego, that in some ways you are very kind of attending and you're in a very service kind of situation to other people, and you're very intricately involved with reading them, understanding them, sensing their pain, sensing their needs. And at the same time, you're making decisions that you have to, like, really be hugely strongly behind. And otherwise, if you live in doubt or hesitancy, you're not going to succeed. And in that way, I think I kind of – that was kind of the climate of what it was to be a male ego in our household.
I know before you went to college and studied acting, you went to, I think, a two-year technical college to study building construction, is that right?
Right, yeah.
So what were you thinking of doing at the time?
Well, I was kind of in a period where I didn't want to do what my brothers had done, which was go to small Ivy League colleges and everything. And I wanted to do something where I felt like I could, at that point, I was really fascinated by barns. It was, you know, I was 17, I think, and I was just aware of the fact that in my part of Western New York State, there was a lot of agricultural life that was disappearing. And I loved the architecture of barns. And I thought, I'll go to this building construction program and I'll learn about making barns and makes barns. No, it wasn't very practical at all. But once I got there, I realized that instead I was spending hours and hours doing formulas where you figure out how many water closets an office building needs. And I realized, this isn't what I had in mind. Maybe I ought to go into something else. And by that time, I had kind of gotten attracted to this program, this drama program, this guy Bill Campbell in Delhi, New York, was running, and he was very charismatic, and so I started doing theater there.
No, after you studied acting in college, you went to Montana and taught at the University of Montana, ended up...
It was Montana State University, yeah, in Bozeman.
Okay, thank you. And then ended up teaching there, and then finally, I think, chairing the drama department. Was it hard for you to teach with so little experience at the time?
It was a big charade. The best acting I ever did in my life. I even had a corduroy coat with patches on my elbows. That's how insecure I was. Oh, man, I was just a couple years older than anybody there. And I hadn't planned to teach. I planned to go to New York and work as a professional because I knew that I thought, you know, teachers should have had practical life experience. And then Montana is so beautiful, and I'd been out there for a bunch of years before doing open air theater. And I liked all these people involved with this program, and I said, all right, I'll do it. And I did it for 1 year thinking that'll be it. And then they said, oh, stay. And so I stayed a second year, but by the middle of the second year, I knew I had to kind of just say, whew, I pulled this off and nobody's really turned on the lights, so I might as well get out while the going's good.
And you went where, to New York?
Yeah, went to New York City.
And started acting in theater?
Yeah,
let me ask you, when you started doing auditions and they said, well, what's your experience? And you said, well, I taught acting in Montana. Was that considered an important credential?
No, I never told anybody.
Oh.
I never told them I trained as a director. I kind of, even in a way, because that was my training, was as a director in theater, for theater directing. And you're living on practically air. I had no money, and I was doing survival jobs for like $3.50 an hour. So it felt rather sad to say, I was just a college professor last year. Right, yeah.
Now, Ruthless People was your first film, and I think your first comedy as well. Was comedy unlike what you were used to? It really was a big change for you?
Yeah, that was it was a surprise because I had I kind of made my way around New York City with parts that were like a very kind of physical troubled dramas and the other things that made me very surprised that I was going to do this big Hollywood comedy. And later, I looked back on it, I thought, you know, that Ruthless People is actually one of the few comedies that are rated R. So that was it was a pretty racy comedy, you know. But at the time, it felt like selling out a little bit. But it was a surprise. And then since then, I have kind of really enjoyed a lot of these comedies. So it feels like a very natural kind of extension of what I'm interested in. But I have to say, the best funny to me is funnies that come out of a movie like Last Seduction.
Yeah, right, right.
There's something about, I know those are the movies I laugh most at, is when it feels like you aren't trying to make a comedy, and it's somehow, it's very serious, but it's also very funny.
Yeah, I agree. Now you have another movie coming up soon called Mr. Wrong, which stars you and Ellen DeGeneres. Can you give us a preview?
Well, I'm very fond of this whole character and the story and everything. It's a black comedy. That's one of the things, reasons why I was thinking about Ruthless People, because they were trying to justify the fact that there can be some tough, weird, dangerous zones you can go to in a comedy and maybe get an R and still make some money and not have everybody fear that they're going to just be in a clunker or something. But Ellen is a woman who's not with a guy, and there's a lot of pressure on her to find somebody, and we meet each other, and I'm a very right kind of guy, and it feels like the most romantic of the romantic encounters you could ever imagine. She goes a little far, she goes a little too early, but I'm sure it's happened, but all of us, but that, and then that feeling the next day, is this for real? I think it's for real. I think it's a dream. It's great. And then in the slowest incrementations, this character, Whitman, you realize is not exactly what she had in mind, but he's very obsessively in love with her, and he's pursuing her. And some say that he becomes, you know, just the thing you want to avoid and get away from. It's like it's a nightmare. It's the monster. But I like to think of Whitman as culturally unintegrated. He's marching to his own drummer. He's never a threat to her, but he just has his own passions and his own inclinations, which when he decides to really allow the world to see the way he really feels, it's a little scary.
Well, that sounds great. I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thanks. It's a great privilege to be on the show that I listen to so much.
Oh, well, thanks. Bill Pullman, he's currently starring in Casper and While You Were Sleeping. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.